Support for SyncBook Radio comes from listeners like you. Consider helping to make independent productions like SyncBook Radio possible by becoming a donor. Your generous gift helps to keep these unique voices broadcasting and exploring. Details about how you can help can be found at thesyncbook.com/donate. Thanks.
You are listening to Always Record from SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com. Today for episode 106, Loving the Alien or Young Lust for the Anima Other.
Living here, I guess. You might apparently hear some pots and pans and things happening in the kitchen, but should be okay.
Some it'll pots add, and some grinders.
Yeah, it'll add texture to the conversation. It's fine.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This is what it is. It's not a roller coaster across from the boardwalk.
But, yeah. I mean, at least you have internet, so that's cool.
At least. You said it, man.
But anyway, so I was just thinking, not to just, I guess, jump into the deep end real quick, but...
jump in.
Okay, so Alan, you were on Type 1 and you were kind of talking about like the heavy versus light sync perspective, I guess. And what is the proper balance between the two and what's going on with all that? And it's funny because I've been thinking on it, and then today I had kind of experienced both at once. So in the morning, I'm like, you know what? I couldn't agree more with Alan on that. It's like, if you play with this stuff, it is playful and it is fun. And it is relevant on that kind of micro scale where you manifest little things and it is fun and playful. But then there is that element where you can't control it. It's if sync is kind of it's part of magic ritual or something, or waking ritual or unconscious ritual. It might just wake something up, like, and you not really knowing what you were doing with it in the first place. So it's like, well, yeah, absolutely. That's totally it. But then I had to go just drop off my car to get it looked at. And I walked back. It's like a 30-minute walk back to the apartment. And, you know, I just saw like a few things here and there. And I totally see like the attraction of just kind of going out and seeing kind of trivial things and having them synchronize with whatever's on your mind or in your life. And yeah, I don't know. I haven't come to any conclusions or anything about it, but it's just it's funny to, well, or maybe not funny, but just engaging to have those inner dialogues and then kind of see them side by side in a given day and ponder it. But I enjoyed the Type 1 conversation, and that just stayed with me the last couple of days since it aired.
Yeah, I listened to like the first three quarters of it. It was good. Went on a whole enlightenment spiel. That was interesting. I enjoyed it. I was trying to relate what you were saying to what, like, right before this phone call started, I was looking at a comment from Thomas Anderson with his Kubrick article, and I was trying to. I didn't catch that. I had been tagged without being tagged on YouTube. He said, one qualifier for David, I've been suggesting the films are empty of unconscious meaning, not conscious meaning. Obviously, a narrative has conscious meaning, so you can find all the Jungian stuff you like that Kubrick, that he consciously put there, but that's still very different from an artist working out his unconscious stuff and creating work as a means to discover things about his own psyche. It may be a subtle qualitative difference, or it may be massive qualitative difference. I don't know yet. But the thing is that the whole point of the Red Book, in a way, was that it was personal to Jung. Not like, you know, some of the stuff where he goes into archetypes and stuff in a lot of his books. But he makes that point throughout that book. I don't know if you guys read some of that. But that's like a repeated point. So I'm just kind of, I don't completely know what he's getting at altogether. Bill responds with, if I'm reading you correctly, you're stating that Kubrick's films are not art because they lack any unconscious content, that the obsessive detail refuses is designed to eliminate any unconscious content through saturating all of it in consciously controlled. There is no control. I don't know what the fuck is being communicated. I'm sorry. I'm like, I don't understand.
So can I kind of tie those two things together? John and Sandra Moore, you were talking like the things that you play with, and then it starts to kind of like, holy shit, you turned something on, right? Like, it's now it's there, now deal with it. And David, your question, this idea of like what's control and what's not in art. So I feel like I can share this because there's nothing personal in here. There was a let's see. Okay, this is for, messages from Zenor, and he says, the other book, so he's talking about the Suicide Kings video, which I hope everyone who's listening to Always Record, you've heard me talk about it enough, I hope you realize that I have put about 8 minutes of a video online that anyone can go watch. It's, if you go to thesyncbook.com, you can click on the Vimeo icon on the top right, and it's there just by itself, or you can go to thesyncbook.com/OE2014, and one of the presentation, that Saturday night presentation video, you can watch the whole thing there with me and Rodney Asher and Will Morgan. So whatever. Zenor obviously watched it, and he's referring to that, and he's talking about the scene from Apocalypse Now where the golden bough is shown. And he says, the other book in the Apocalypse Now scene you feature, aside from Frasier, is From Ritual to Romance. By chance, I just picked up that book in the same edition as that's what's seen in Apocalypse Now, about a week before your video came out. I'm reading it now along with some background info, and the implications are really rattling me. Have you read it? I wrote, I'm aware of it, but have not read it. This might be the needed prodding for me to actually get a copy. Zenor says, your video was the prod for me to start reading it. I plan to write about it soon. There's a bunch of overlap with stuff that I've been researching. From Ritual to Romance was the major source, admittedly, to T.S. Eliot's Wasteland. The editor of The Wasteland was Ezra Pound. Kurtz quotes Eliot in Apocalypse Now. Eliot planned to use Conrad's, quote, the horror, quote, as an epitaph for The Wasteland. The weirdness explodes from there. Haha, I meant to write epigraph, but the horror would be a great epitaph for The Wasteland if it ever ended. I finished From Ritual to Romance. It's overly cautious and academic, but it emphasizes the esoteric side of the Grail fertility myth that is not found in Frasier. There's something huge here. So I write, yeah, the cluster was already there influencing each other. Apocalypse Now just synthesized and pointed to it. He says, the cluster creeps out into an entire vineyard. After reading From Ritual to Romance, I went straight to reading Heart of Darkness. I also found this book about a week ago in a used bin. Weirdly enough, the back cover points out that Eliot meant to use the horror quote to begin The Wasteland. I just finished reading Heart of Darkness today, and I also reread The Wasteland, both on the train. I then decided to go and see Interstellar before going home, not knowing much about it at all. The exact same themes are there. There's even a scene, if you haven't seen it, where a ghost knocks down books by Eliot and Conrad. Later, a black hole is described as a literal Heart of Darkness. I'm now listening to the Moon Room episode on Interstellar. Brilliant stuff as usual. My head is reeling with this shit. I said, amazing, didn't see Interstellar, and honestly had zero interest in doing so until you mentioned this connection. He says, I know, huh? I mostly went there on a whim because I had some time to kill and because I planned to listen to Moon Room. So bizarre, though. I literally just finished The Wasteland while waiting to get into the theater, and I had finished Heart of Darkness on the train ride over. How the hell does this work? I can keep going. I guess I'm just going to finish because it's only like two more paragraphs. I said, I've been asking that question for so very long now. He says, I bet you have. Me too. One weird element in this whole bowl of weirdness is that the phenomenon has its own peculiar rhythm. For long stretches, nothing happens, and then suddenly it takes you for another wild ride. I say, I've taken to calling them sink storms, though there is undoubtedly a better phrasing to be found. Most people in this know exactly what you mean. Once someone has experienced one of these wild rides, there is no doubting it. I'm not big into astrology at all, but I'm open to that being a factor. More likely, or perhaps just the stronger factor, we seem to go through phases of mental states that open us up to it and shut it down when it gets too intense. I don't know, still all speculation as to the what and how of it, but damned if it doesn't sweep in with all the reality and ferocity of a semi-truck. I just share this because this is basically the bridge between the two points you're both addressing here. Like, you can insert, like, very intentional references. Like, here we have this cluster of artists who are all referencing each other's work between Conrad's Heart of Darkness, Apocalypse Now, T.S. Eliot, Ezra Pound. Like, all these guys are clearly referencing each other, but they're also tapping into the archetypal nature of the Matrix. So it's kind of like a self-referential feedback loop, and yet there is still something else where he's able to step into it. Zenor, I'm talking about, is able to step into it, and he's getting hit by the synchronicities of it.
He's getting hit by it because he's actually reading the stuff, and so he's going into allowing the meaning of what the point is of those things to be communicated to him. And then he's seen it reflected back to him in these places. Like, that's the thing. Like, I don't give a fuck about people referencing each other on its own terms. Like, that doesn't matter to me. If I see that they play Thus Spake Zarathustra at the end of E.T. as the ship is flying away with the rainbow, you know, I don't give a shit. On its own terms, like, the reason I care is because of the meaning extended. That's the difference between synchronicity and a coincidence. Like, that's what you're deriving from it. And that's why when I'm looking at the red book on Ullman's desk, you know, it's not just like, oh, isn't that interesting that he's, you know, it's like, no, I looked at the red book and was impacted by it. And I can see on another level when I'm watching The Shining, how it's related, how specific things seem to be related, and it's not using the same part of your brain. It's not an analytical thing. The analytic is there, but that's not what it is. Like, that's just a means to register so you can go to other levels. You know, does that make you guys hear what
I'm
saying?
Oh yeah, of course. And yeah. Something else you said, Alan, where you mentioned, I don't know if you said it or Zenor said it, long periods or plateaus followed by kind of extremes, so extreme highs or extreme lows or somewhere, an extreme of some nature, a deviation for sure, and it feels like a storm. And I was actually just talking to Bill Klaus about this because he's on the next episode of Pentimental, and he took us in this direction, which was kind of fun. And it was, in poker, there's something called variance, and variance is, yeah, the ups and downs and, like, plateaus over the long term followed by, like, huge upswings, or it's basically a culmination of all your small decisions when you zoom out far enough. And you could probably see that in the same way as sync. There's all these little small things along the way that make up the plateau stage, and then there are kind of the upturns or upswings or downswings or downturns, however you want to picture it, that sync embodies. Basically, it's like huge, it's huge fluctuations in a far from equilibrium system, which is what the human system is. And really, when you think about it, I've been having fun with this idea. We know that, like, individual electrons can quote unquote travel back in time. Now, that's not as literal as it sounds, but what it does is it follows a totally acausal, like, route through its trajectory, basically. So it's just it's just bizarre mathematically speaking. So they say it's traveling back in time because, and that's what the equation is saying, but who the hell knows what that even means in a literal sense. But let's just assume it is literal. So electrons can do it, and then we say that, okay, once you go up to the human level, that kind of stuff doesn't work anymore. But the way sync works and consciousness might seem to work, and then when you zoom out of that, when you zoom out of, like, the human condition, right, it's like you look at all the little dots on the grid and humans are nothing more than like electrons on the atom of Earth or whatever. So it's like, why can't that experience be accessed by people? That kind of like weird, what the fuck is this sort of thing? And so we're told there's no relationship between like microphysics and biology and macrophysics and biology. So astrology and the human condition, or quantum physics and the human condition, but it's all there. And it's like, this kind of stuff is yeah, there's a co-creative kind of psychosomatic element to it, where you are, yeah, after you start getting the meaning of things, you start creating your own reality in certain ways. But what instigates or perpetuates or creates the impetus for that is like well beyond, I think, like just being in your own head. It's just that's what Sync is to me in a lot of ways. That's not everything, but going off what you were saying. Did I completely lose you?
No. I mean, okay. This is, I think, right. This kind of speaks to the heart of it. Is like, are you, you know, people took this idea of like co-creating the universe or, you know, reality. I think it kind of, again, all these things are like aspects of it. I don't like when people actually like codify that we know what it means, you know, like the secret or, you know, shit like that. But certainly there is an aspect of, again, it's feedback. So we are creating it. And this goes back to like David saying, I don't care what, if someone just does a reference, but it's what's your intention behind it. So when you put some sort of intention and action into it, you are influencing the system. And obviously the system will then influence you. But it is, to use that sort of more new agey term, it is a co-creation process, without a doubt.
Yeah. And, you know, I really don't dabble in Jung all that often, but I'm finally starting, and I'm like just finishing up Four Archetypes: Mother, Rebirth, Spirit, Trickster. And it's largely an abstract or kind of selection book, which is, I think, good for, I think, getting involved with anything new. So, but anyway, it's pretty good. And it gets into, again, this idea of like, what is the collective unconscious and this idea of the psyche. And he definitely like hints at, he predates like Sheldrake's idea, but quite a while. But I mean, people predate Jung too. And Jung isn't particularly explicit about it, but his characterization of like, yeah, psyche and what that means. And so it goes well beyond, So Alan, I think that has even caught your attention. I think maybe we even focused on that in episode 88, when we talked about like Wolfgang Pauli and that whole connection and radioactivity. And then it actually
dawns. Funny you mentioned radioactivity.
Okay, okay.
Go ahead.
To finish, radioactivity, right? It's like, okay, if we think of consciousness as like a transducer or a receiver of consciousness, right? So it's like radioactivity if you break that up. And so just like the wordplay itself, like, oh, that, okay, that's what Sync is. It's like you're downloading from the universe, and it's like the nuclear bomb and the splitting of the atom and all this shit, right? So if you're just going to like, yeah, play with the words and kind of create your own reality, there's kind of a small thing you can do with it. But anyway, you go ahead with that.
Oh, I just wanted to say, I think the perfect example of this, John, sounds like you haven't read much Jung. David, I assume you've probably read Carl Jung's essay on UFOs.
No, I read some excerpts from it, and I talked to Jeremy when he was reading it when we went to Olympia, you know. But no, I'm not as familiar with that. Like, I read Synchronicity, the Red Book, and his section of Man and His Symbols. And just a few different essays and stuff. I'm sure I read something else, but I can't remember what it was at the moment. But no, I never read that. Why is there something?
Yeah, I just feel like it's such a prime example, because what he's doing in there is he's saying, hey, look, I think the UFO obviously represents a certain archetype. He's like, I also think that it ties into the astrological ages of man, that we are, you know, if we have this idea of like entering a new astrological age, there seems to be some idea of like opening minds collectively, and this is going to bring in some weird, basically like rifts, you know, like you're entering a new astrological age, there's going to be all this new stuff flooding into the collective consciousness, and we're going to basically perceive it as weird, trippy shit, whether that be UFOs or social upheavals or blah, 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 right? And he kind of talks about, like, he does this really nice cross-section of saying it's all these things at once. He says, but, you know, it's not just a psychic phenomenon. He says, like, there are physical remains, and this is so interesting to me also. He's studied, okay, actual UFO encounters, and that, you know, people have gone out and taken, what do you call the radioactive sensors?
Geiger counters?
Yes, thank you. You know, go out and actually measure, and there'll be radiation left behind, or there'll be certain things where, like, there are certain UFO cases where there is physical evidence left behind that this was a nuts and bolts, or, like, you know, not, doesn't mean it's, you know, anal probers from Mars.
No, but like the soil composition will change, or exactly, something really bizarre.
Right. So when I say, use the phrase nuts and bolts, might have other connotations when we say UFOs, but to say, like, there is a physical component, it's not purely a psychic component. Because I've thought about that, like, someone could have basically a Kundalini experience or a ego death experience of this or that, and someone might perceive it as an angel, someone else might perceive it as a UFO, someone else might perceive it as leprechauns or fairies or whatever the fuck, right? But that explanation in itself only goes so far, since there are physical remnants left behind. So it's almost like the explanation that probably makes the most sense is that it's some effect of both, but also that if you're making it real, you're not just hallucinating that you saw a UFO and someone else is hallucinating that they saw a pixie. You're kind of like calling it into existence, and it really fucking exists. Like, there is a physical something there, right? Or that there is a physical something there, and it happens to correspond. This is synchronicity. This is the time that the physical appearance of this UFO corresponds chronologically with your change in your mental state, so that these two events come together in time, not necessarily causally related, but to say, hey, there is a physical UFO or a physical pixie or, you know, dancing dolphin or whatever the fuck it is, and it just so happens to correspond with a change in your mental state. And that's why you would have both. You would have the physical and the psychic states at the same time, an inner and outer. And we get so hung up on what's causing what, when obviously what we're doing is Jung's sort of thing was it's a causal. But I just thought the UFOs to me are a prime example, because it's something that actually has physical evidence left behind. You know, with most synchronicities, it's a sort of abstract thing. With this example, out of, you know, I'm sure we can come up with some other really good ones, to me it's like, yeah, it's an abstract with evidence left behind.
Yeah, I found myself explaining to a friend who was very unfamiliar with even the idea of synchronicity or the significance of synchronicity, and it was fun to just like be like, okay, as simplistic as I can be, suppose you're walking down the street and you see a sticker with a pig on the back of a truck, and then you see a number in relationship to it somewhere else. So say you see, you know, 37 on a street post, and then you see the sticker there, and then, you know, a week or whatever goes by and you're sitting somewhere else, and on the television you see a commercial with a pig on the back of a truck, and then 37 again. And suppose it happens a third time. If it happens a second time, you're probably, you know, if you took note of it, you know, and this is like what Joe was saying the other night, he's like, when you open up to synchronicity, you're looking for it. So then there's that argument where it's like, well, what you're looking for, you're looking with, maybe. Maybe you're, you know. But yeah, I was explaining the phenomenon. Like when there is no direct link between the things, that's kind of what makes it a coincidence. Otherwise, it's no longer, we're not even talking about coincidence. That's the distinction between conspiracy and thing. Just getting super ultra basic, that was a deal. But like, for instance, last night I watched another Twilight Zone episode, right? Called to Agnes with Love. It's about a computer that this guy is trying to figure out how he can do 6 revolutions of Venus for the space program, and he wants the computer to tell him if it's capable of doing that. But the computer keeps wanting to know about this guy's love life or lack of a love life, and the computer essentially falls in love with the guy. But what was weird is that he said Agnes, speaking to the computer, he said, "You're just like a mother." And he was relating to this computer as a mom, but the computer wanted to be his lover. The computer was falling in love with him. And this is obviously, this predates 2001, but it's very similar in the sense that you have this computer that basically is not supposed to have these feelings, but the feelings are coming up in the thing, or at least it's, and so it seems to be a statement on the nature of ego too, that it's like this mechanical thing that does it, right? Like the, you know, like what it's, it has a replication of the feelings that aren't necessarily the feelings themselves or something, or like you're identifying with something as your most authentic being when your authentic being might be far beyond that, you know, or at least this is what I was taking from it. And this is the meaning that I was attributing. So, but I just, the point being, and how this connects to what I was saying before, is that, you know, I was already relating to this idea, to focusing on Alien with the computer named Mother, and this whole idea, how it had the stuff you were talking about that the guy included in the film, where he's saying Shakti this and Kali that, and basically relating to like the motherboard as literally the you know, archetypal mother or whatever. But this is just, this idea was like, it was just like 2001, except instead of it killing the crew for the importance of the mission, it's, you know, failing aid in what its information role, like staying, just doing the job of a computer because it's having its emotions get in the way. And so no, I don't know. It just felt, it was very, you know, coincidental, but I was attributing meaning to it. So it became synchronistic.
I really want to go into this alien thing, specifically that image I made the other day. But real quick, there's just a little thing on it. You're talking about this idea of the computer falling in love, and there's an old short story, Kurt Vonnegut short story. It's in the collection Welcome to the Monkey House, and it's called EPICAC, EPICAC. It's like an acronym. And this, it's about this like war computer. They build this computer for like war games, and then one of the guys there is like in love with this girl, and he wants to like write poetry for her. So he asks the computer to write poetry for him. And the computer asks him like, well, okay, well, tell me about her, you know, or like, what's love? What does it mean? And then the computer decides it loves the girl and all this sort of stuff. And the computer ends up committing suicide because it can't be with the girl. And it commits suicide by like spewing out hundreds of poems as a wedding present for the couple, saying, okay, now you can both have this poetry forever, but I'm done. So there's like also this like computer suicide, all this sort of interesting stuff. But what it also reminds me of is in the novel 1984, right? Orwell makes this sort of, he keeps making these references to these book writing machines as if like, in one respect, it's a play on we don't value art anymore. We've got art down to this just propaganda science. So we have these machines that can just crank out novels rather than having actual artists do it, which, you know, could be commentary on today's like music industry, right? Or like all these sort of like mechanical formulaic artistry. But there's like a really interesting, almost like, you combine these two things together and you get this sort of Terence McKenna artificial intelligence that, okay, Orwell devises this dystopian future where the machines are writing books and creating art, but maybe one day that writing that art is what forces the computer to become sentient and discover love. You know, I'm just throwing all this mishmash together.
Well, okay, so I'll start somewhere and try to tie it all back together, and I'll try not to do it and try to be concise. So you mentioned that aliens are interesting because they leave physical traces. I also think that ghosts are an element of Sync and also probably better evidence than aliens do. But that's just my opinion as far as quote unquote objective science goes, even though that's a myth. But as far as I'm concerned, I think there's more evidence for this interfacing between whatever, this purgatory where some things are, and they're elements of ourselves. At the same time, I don't know where to draw the line between like what is inside and what is outside sometimes. So I don't, that's why I call ghosts an element of Sync. It's like, they might be echoes. My friend said, it really challenged me. He's like, dude, if time overlaps, it's like, how do we know it's just not people from another time period? It's not ghosts at all. And they're just living their lives, and we're just, it's such a weird kind of intersection of realities that we just think it's ghosts, but it's just another timeline. And I don't necessarily buy that, but, well, it's not that I don't buy it and I entertain it, obviously, because it challenged me, but my mind never went there in the first place, so it's hard for me to wrap my head around. And, but anyway, so ghosts, I think, are very interesting and open up all kinds of questions themselves. Now, and the alien thing, that's like, in reading the Jung book, he says, you know, these archetypes, they almost seem alien. So, of course, we evoke this kind of like alien, in discovering your deeper self, you find an alien self too, because it's something totally like alien to what you thought you were or whatever. So, in that sense, it's only natural that we evoke the alien or the other through these archetypes. So, in a technological society, it's grays. In Iceland, it's fairies. It's all this shit. So it's, yeah, Alan, what you're saying is like right there. It's all the same thing, only in different garb, basically.
I was just talking about ghosts this morning. How, like, you know, they were talking like how, you know, people can talk about different evidence and whatever. For all the things I grew up believing or not believing, there have been so many instances of sort of, for lack of a better term, paranormal activity or ghosts interacting with ghosts in my family, that like it's like that's just normal. Like I, you know, one of like the earliest stories I remember hearing as a child was my grandmother's brother who was in World War II, had a friend who was killed, and like as the guy's dying, he gives this man a ring and says like, you know, here, keep this to remember me and our friendship, whatever. So my, what is that, great uncle, he holds on to this ring for 30 years or, you know, whatever it is. And then one day he loses the ring. The ring goes missing. And him and his wife tear the house apart and they can't find it. And they're really, really upset.
Gollum got it.
Well, like a few months pass and the guy has this dream and the dead guy who gave him the ring comes to him in this dream takes him through the house and shows him where to find the ring. And so the next morning he wakes up and he goes to where the ghost in the dream showed him, and it's there. Now, here we have a second aspect, because it's not a waking ghost, it's a dream ghost. And there's all sorts of things we could throw onto this. Is it, you know, precognition? Is that just how he processed it or whatever, whatever? I'm just saying that this is one of the earliest sort of, you know, stories of are ghosts real or not. This sort of thing was common in my family, and not, like I said, so I've had similar experiences. I've had what could only be considered poltergeist experiences. To me, like, to say that there's no evidence for it, I've had direct experience with it. So I'm with you. Like, whatever we want to call it, however we want to categorize it, or people are experiencing it different ways. Some, again, I don't know to say, are aliens and fairies and ghosts the same thing? I don't fucking know, but they're definitely interconnected phenomena.
Yeah, Right. The connections. And that's like kind of what I'm focusing. It's like we're all manifestations of the same thing, right? So how does everything connect? And I always just tied back to like the ether, because that's easy. It's just like, hey, that's the source. Let's tie back to that and see how it all fits together if we can. But yeah, I don't know the answer either. Nobody does, but it's fun to speculate nonetheless and conjecture.
I was communicating with Ezra last night. He was asking about some art, and the art piece has poltergeist written in the center of it in Japanese. And he was asking me why I did that. He was like, what's the significance of that? And I was explaining how the term poltergeist literally connects sound and spirit. And so the idea of a poltergeist is a, spiritual intelligence or whatever, you know, that communicates specifically through sound, through the mechanism of audio.
Why are you saying poltergeist is sound?
Because that's what the term is supposed to mean.
Oh, I thought it was angry ghost.
Well, that's part of it. But I've looked up the definition in a few places, and most places emphasize communicating through noise.
Cool. Okay. Interesting.
And it was just a little interesting tidbit. And, when I was relating to him the film Poltergeist and how it's connected with gremlins, and that Mogwai means demon, and there's this whole thing about water with the traditional Mogwai demon that it reproduces through water and whatever, you know, and it's a seasonal thing that there's more demons at this time of year or whatever. I don't know. It's trippy. But basically, I was going into this and I was explaining, I guess that he had never heard the idea that Poltergeist and E.T. came out within a month of each other, and that they're the exact same length in time. It's a Summer Spielberg. They come from the same script called Night Skies, which is about intelligences or beings from Sirius. I mean, they're not really intelligences in that. They're like crazy gremlins, right? Like critters, you know. But it's emphasized that they're from Sirius. You have this little dog thing, you know, in both E.T. and Poltergeist, and all the parallels between those movies are just crazy. But what I was taking from it is this emphasis on that they're two sides of the same thing, and we're relating to as a loving alien externally in E.T. is also a malevolent spirit in Poltergeist, and that's the nature of the duality of what the intelligence communicates. And so Ezra was kind of speculating on things, and I was telling him my personal take is that it's kind of a joke, because the idea Kabbalistically, if you're looking at that, I mean, that's in the art, that's open for debate. But if you were to look at Spielberg's representing a Kabbalistic idea, especially when you look at the nature of gremlins as the shells or the husks of the Kleepote and all of this, the shells around holiness, and they're watching Invasion of the Body Snatchers and then this whole cocoon thing and whatever, if you're, relating to that as what is actually communicated in the Zohar surrounding the Kleepote, is that they are literally also the shells around our perception of the real world. Like, we're existing in Sion, you know, but we're not perceiving where we actually are. And it's literally the Kleepote are the intelligences that manipulate our perceptions of what we're actually existing within, so we don't see our true selves, we don't see our true environment. I don't know. It's just an interesting rabbit hole there.
I don't know why Skype turned my L between parentheses into a beating heart, but I was typing here. if you take the character...
I'm trying to write Anima Heart Mother.
Well, I was going to say, it's so funny. I didn't mean for it to be heart. It's if you just take the letter... I put the letter L between two parentheses. I was saying the character's name is Animal Mother. We'll cut the L off and it's Anima. And you cut the right. M off and it's other, right? Like, we have this idea of like the othering. This is what you were talking about, the alien. What is the alien is the other, right? I could kind of go off on a tangent here, but like, I made this Adam Hart Mother image, and I was trying to kind of combine together the alien mother, the Adam Hart mother, isn't the guy who plays animal mother. Isn't his real name Adam? Isn't he Adam Baldwin?
Oh, is he?
I think he might be.
He could very well. I don't know. I feel like I... Oh, man.
Anyway, so like I start to kind of like put all this stuff together and... Animal mother character. Sorry. Now I have to know. I think his real... Yeah, Adam Baldwin. Yeah, his real name is Adam.
Ha ha.
So Adam Hart mother, right? Anyway, animal mother, the alien mother, all these sorts of things go together. And then I'm realizing that, like, wait a second. We have the aliens break out of shells. We have the Full Metal Jacket, which we've referred to, the Kleepote, the shells, the husks, the Kleepote live in a world of shit. In Full Metal Jacket, they said, we are in a world of shit. We've referred to this as the Kleepote. You have the cow's ass, like manure and shit and all this sort of stuff. Obviously, he's based the movie on the Jungian shadow, which is this alien is very much a shadow creature, right? But it's also... we have the spaceship is the mother, so it's a phallic thing, but it's actually a queen. It's like an insect, so it's like a female dick, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, well, yeah. They emphasize that in Alien. I mean, that's the, you know, the she's the bitch.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. And then there's like, you know, this is actually from the movie Forbidden Planet, but there's a whole plot point about the monsters from the id. And to me, this really seems like a kind of a strong aspect as well. So when we look at the other, especially from an egoic presence, we're looking at the id, we have this very alien nature, just like in Full Metal Jacket, the sniper. It's like, what is the sniper? Well, the sniper is actually a woman. It's like it's a very feminine and exotic thing to these white men, right? From their Western perspective. So there's like all these sorts of really interesting depth that, like, well, I know we've talked about, but just there was something in the act of putting these elements together graphically that my mind just kind of blew a fuse.
Oh, tell me about it. That's why I do the collages I do. It's just, I mean, more than anything, it's just through meditation on the different points, you know? I mean, I look at, you know, Animal Mother in Full Metal Jacket, and he's got the I am become death on his helmet, which is what Oppenheimer said when we split the atom. And then I look at Adam Hart Mother goes with Summer 42, which is, that's the whole joke, it seems, is that, you know, it's got this whole Oedipal thing where it's a kid getting with an older woman. But then at the same time, it's during World War II and centered around this whole nuclear threat, you know, and fear of nuclear attack. And so you have this whole atom splitting idea. And so, I mean, I just...
In the movie Alien, isn't that how she destructs the spaceship is like an atomic...
Yeah. It's totally, it ends with an atomic explosion. Yeah.
Right.
It's totally nuclear. Yeah, total trip. It was funny. I was just talking to Joe on my birthday. He came over here and I was like, dude, I'm on this whole weird thing where we talked about this on the show a long time ago, but I had watched Jaws and I was realizing that one of the most significant things in Jaws, as far as I can tell, is that long speech that the dude who has all the shark jaws in his house, you know, it's like why the film, you know, but the title of the film, Shark Jaws, you know, he's telling his story about delivering the nuclear bomb for Hiroshima on a boat, and then his boat gets blown up on the way back, right? So they do, isn't that so? Or maybe there was two people deliver, whatever it was, his boat gets blown up and it's connected to delivering the bomb, and then he's swimming and all these people are getting bit in half around him by sharks. And how I thought that was weird, because if you're looking at atom like a dom, like the split atom, the split a dom, which formulates the tree, because the tree is literally the split star that becomes divided, right? And that's the supernal triad and the seven lower sphero. But the way he says it, he's like, they just bit him right in half, and then he ends up ultimately getting bit right in half, so he becomes the split, a dom. But I thought I was making this whole connection, right? And I talked about it on the show a number of months ago. But then I was watching a clip from Back to the Future from Joe's video, and I saw that Jaws was in Blast from the Past, which he was already connecting with Roswell and the nuclear testing and all this stuff. And I was like, of all the things that are going to be in the Blast from the Past window, besides, you know, Roger Rabbit, who happens to be the voice of Roger Rabbit that tells him about the clock tower in the first film, you know, but how strange it is, like, you know, that there's this, just his Jaws there. And then he reminded me, and I forgot after telling him this, that there's that in Back to the Future 2, Jaws comes out and literally as a hologram and goes to bite Marty in half, you know.
That's right.
And I was just funny because I was already tripping on it, just it being in the window, it being mentioned at all when he has this whole nuclear edge to Back to the Future. And if you're looking at it from a symbolic, you know, Kabbalistic / you know, kind of archetypal standpoint, it's really as far out that that just took it to a whole other level. Worth mentioning, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's so we've talked. I believe we've talked before. It's like the shark. It's been related to like the vagina dentata, right?
Yeah, sure.
Like this chthonic, you know, underworld sea creature with very sharp. Like there's just all these sorts of. I believe we've discussed this before, so I don't want to go back.
Have you guys discussed the movie Teeth?
I know I've never seen the movie Teeth.
I saw it and wished I had.
I won't watch it. I just know about the premise. It's about a woman whose vagina has teeth, and she takes it, you know, for an adventure.
Yeah, I tried. the Fame Monster.
Uh huh.
Because that teeth thing, it didn't go, and then I ended up eventually finding Metropolis, and it blew me away. But
yeah. Anyway, not interrupt you. Go on.
Oh, no, I mean, so yeah, so that there's a term for that. It's called vagina dentata, right? And I saw this image the other day, which brought it all home. I just dropped it into the chat here. Obviously, the alien is incredibly phallic, but what is the, you know, the common crossover correspondence to Alien is the Predator movies, right? There's been a series of Alien versus Predator things. And the Predator is very clearly, if an alien is a dangerous dick, the Predator is very clearly a vagina dentata. I don't know if you guys see this image I put in here.
It's fully, I know exactly what you're saying, yeah.
I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
I'm definitely looking at it, and I can't not see it.
Yeah. Right. Once you've seen it.
You guys saw that Rob Agger video where he's pointing out that in the egg, the alien egg in the original Alien, he was told by the Catholic Church that it couldn't be a single slit because it looked too much like a vagina. And so his response to that was to turn it into a cross. But then not only that, if you play the first time the alien burst from the egg in the first Alien, if you do it frame by frame, you can actually see that he placed literally just a pornographic close-up of a vagina in the alien egg. As a statement to the Catholic Church, it's just basically
which is like Fight Club, right?
What happened in
Fight Club? Doesn't the character Tyler Durden, right? He inserts the single frame of like penises.
Totally, exactly. Same premise, but this is like, I mean, he's just doing that for a single theater. This is a director. Everybody who watched it, and they on some level they have to pick that up,
not to detract, because what you're saying again, it has a very practical explanation, which is in itself super valuable and fascinating and kind of awesome to be like, fuck you to the church, here's a picture of a vagina. But what I'm saying is that in Fight Club, the character himself has a split mind, and it's his kind of shadow self that does this,
right?
So I'm saying the idea of doing this in a movie about the shadow self.
Right. I love it. Totally. Wow. Where was I?
All right. So yeah, so Rob Agger says he inserts an actual frame that they split, so they split the slit into four to make it a cross.
Right.
But you know, I think, you know,
kind of hit on this before, that, like, as you say, it is the alien creature itself is phallic, but it's a female. It's a female phallus. But then obviously the eggs themselves are incredibly vaginal. So we have this sort of constant flipping of androgynous sexuality.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I went from watching a Rob Agger video about The Big Lebowski to watching a Rob Agger video about Alien. And a lot of things in Alien, I was, you know, I think the thing in the first place with Rob Agger's take on Alien, I came to independently with Amy watching it one day. And then I saw that Rob Agger had this whole argument. And I'm like, okay, well, pretty much everything he's saying is what I said with Amy. And I'm sure we're not the only ones, just because it's so overt when you watch Alien. That's why he went to the, he's like sick of the trolls for that video. So he made a video where he's just, it was so funny. It sounded like SyncQuick news, because it was just like his attitude towards the whole thing, you know. You just have to watch it. It's like, what is it? Oh, let's overanalyze Alien with Rob Agger or whatever. But I watched this whole Lebowski thing, and it was talking about the scissors, which I was already tripping on. The fact that she, you know, Maude, when she's talking to the small Lebowski, right? And he's in the room, and she says, she's asking if the word vagina bothers him. And then she says, well, a man will refer to his, you know, his, you know, she lists a few different names, and she says, or his Johnson. And he repeats Johnson. Well, when they later on, when they say, well, cut off your Johnson, I mean, it's in your Suicide Kings video, right? I mean, you kept that in there. But I like that there's, when she says Johnson, you can see the scissors in the background that come up later in the dream when the nihilists are coming at him, and they're wearing red, and the scissors are against the red background. It's just really obvious. But what I never put together, which Rob Agger was pointing out, was that the image that she's showing him in the first place seems to be symbolic of a set of scissors when she's you can see it's a female form, like it looks like a body with arms and legs outspread, but then she's relating it to a vagina. So, but then it's like, there's this, I can't help but mention this because it seems to tie in with what you were saying before with teeth and whatnot. You know, you look at, you know, Predator and whatnot. It's like, seems to be, you know, a play on this kind of either unconscious fear or conscious fear or whatever, you know. You dig it?
I dig it. I dig it. I just don't get it. Like, in the sense that I've known a number of men who've talked about either, you know, having these vagina dentata dreams, or people who, you know, have a sort of fear of the vagina.
Oh, I guess I'm not communicating. I take this whole thing as, I mean, I guess I assume it. I look at it and I'm like, it seems that the fear is one of demasculating. Like, if I look at Alejandro Jodorowsky's fascination with castration, I don't take it on, I immediately assume that it's communicating man's own fear of basically,
By the way, did you see Dance of Reality?
Like that's, I haven't yet. Did you?
I did.
And was it good?
Well, we can go there. It was good. It was different. There were issues I had with it. I didn't think it was as strong as a lot of other things, but it was definitely very enjoyable. But I just wanted to say, in there is a scene of a pretty graphic scene of placing electrodes on testicles and torturing somebody that goes on for quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, I just see it as that this is a statement on where violence is stemming from. Like, if I watch like any Kubrick movie now, I'm looking at it from such a you know, psychology kind of angle that I can't help but look at it like, what is the unconscious fears actually run deeper than the way they're being represented. Like, it's like, this is like a dream symbolism, and that what it's communicating is on an unconscious level is where are all the issues stemming from? Where are all the neuroticism stemming from? And fear of demasculating, you know, is definitely one of those. I mean, people feel that they have to prove and assert, like when I see, like, you know, us shooting rockets in space in the shape of phalluses, you know, it's like, what? Like, why are all weapons phallic? You know, like, it's just, it's a statement on our whole psychology. And so when I look at, you know, what seems to be expressed there symbolically in like the Big Lebowski and an Alien and stuff, it's just, it seems to be more of a statement on the neuroses of human beings. I mean, because that's the whole point of the Big Lebowski, is that it's the Gulf War. What's driving what's fueling, that's ironic, but what's fueling the aggression that will not stand, you know? It's like, you get what I'm saying?
Absolutely. The Gulf, it's the Great Divide.
Right.
I like how Rob Agger points out that scene where she splashes the paint on his face, then hands him a towel.
It's like a cum shot.
Yeah, totally. Which I hadn't noticed before. I really like that. It's obvious once someone points it out. But I thought it was really interesting. You're showing this idea of neuroses and what the patriarchy can and can't face. Did you see that was just recently the British government is trying to outlaw certain types of pornography? Specifically, they want to ban anything that shows specifically female ejaculation. Face sitting, and it was this idea. So it's like these protesters were talking about, obviously the thing that puts the woman sort of in that position is what these people are objecting to. You can still have as much male ejaculation as you want, but female ejaculation is a no-go.
Where does that come from?
Right.
No pun intended. Like that. That seems like a kind of a power thing more than anything.
Completely. Yeah. It's a very transparent, either power, you know, trying to hold on to a sense of symbolic power, or just being afraid of the flip side of it.
Well, that's the Germans, huh? For people that are more progressive than just about anyone in the world, as far as the quote unquote green movement is concerned, that's kind of surprising. That's not very progressive. Interesting.
Did you say Germans? I think it's British.
Oh, did I mishear? I probably misheard. I was like, I thought they had the whole schnauzer craziness. I was like, wow, now they're picking up. Okay, well, that makes sense, I guess. That's pretty uptight, to say the least.
But it's further ironic when you have the British Queen. It's a matriarchal.
Right.
On the surface, the woman is the head,
but right.
In reality, you know, not so much.
Yeah.
One older song that we decided to do on this tour came about because Jerry Leonard and I did an arrangement for a New York show last year of this song, and it seemed to be satisfactory. It seemed to be the way that it should maybe always have been done. I don't know. We like doing it this way anyway. This is called Loving the Alien.
Loving the alien, and your prayers, it breaks the sky in two. Believing the strangest things, loving the alien. Palestine, a modern problem. Bounty and a wealth and love. Terror in the best made plan. Watching them come and go. Tomorrow's only yesterday. Christians and the unbelievers hanging by the cross and me. But if you pray, all your sins are hooked upon the sky. Pray and the heathen lie will disappear. Pray. Strangest things, loving the alien, and your prayer, it breaks the sky in two. Believing the strangest things, loving the alien, you pray. Believing the strangest things, loving the alien, and your belief, you're loving the alien, believing the strangest.